revenue that business can get that are internet-based has to do with advertising. As long as that model continues, and right now it's a really successful one, then we're going to have to constantly think as citizens of the United States and consumers of businesses, you know, should there be restrictions on how that advertising is done, the information collected for that, and information being transferred related to that. So it's really an area that, again, heightening awareness for your listeners is important, because it's an area that we really need to think about. How is the best way to regulate that, and should that be done by business? Should they internally do self-regulation? And to what extent do we need laws at the federal level or at the state level to address that?
Thank you to my guest, Bray Kennedy Mayo, and you can hear this episode and more on KBOO's website and podcast app. My name is Claire Rosciato, and thank you for listening.
You're listening to Hindsight's 2020, a day of special programming debriefing the last 3 years under the Trump regime.
Captain Hindsight!
Thank you for listening.
I will tell you this, 10 years ago, no one was talking about white nationalism or white supremacy. There are lots of myths about what the white nationalist movement is. Stereotypes are that they're uneducated, folks who live in rural areas, isolated. But in fact, the white nationalist movement pretty much mirrors the demographics of the United States. It is a movement that has been growing steadily and quietly under the radar of most Americans. These social movements are simply playing off of bigotries that already exist in society. The goal of white nationalists is not to spread hate, but to seize the state by using vehicles of bigotry to build mass movements and to build power and fear. What gives me hope is watching ordinary individuals, right? Mechanics, baseball players, musicians, business leaders, all across America, ordinary people are stepping up in leaderful ways. They are not waiting to be organized. They are acting like the leaders that they are, to some really great results. So I think stepping up in this moment means three very specific things. So one is demanding that elected officials, public leaders, business leaders choose a side in this moment. Are they on the side of swastikas and burning torches, or are they on the side of American people? Two, we have to talk to our neighbors. We have to understand that neo-Nazis, racist skinheads, Klansmen, they're not monsters. They're our neighbors. They go to school with us. They go to the food market with us. The third is that we have to utilize and build power. We have to join organizations, whether they are online organizations, community organizations. The white nationalist movement wants us to be isolated. It wants us to be alone. But there are more of us than there are of them. And by coming together, we can build the momentum in America we see, one that is united, one that moves us forward, one that's grounded in opportunity and equity. There is a better America out here.
Hello, and thank you for tuning into KBOO. We're listening to the words of Eric Ward, who is the executive director of the Western States Center. The center is located here in Portland, Oregon, and at its core mission, it's built to connect the power of community building to challenge and transform individuals, organizations, and systems to achieve racial, gender, and economic justice. As part of today's special programming, Hindsight 2020, I'll be speaking with Amy Hertzfeld-Koppel, who is the Deputy Director of Programs and Strategic Initiatives for the Center. We'll be discussing about how the last 3 years have affected the organization and what we should be expecting in 2020. Thank you very much for listening. For KBOO, I'm Tammy Hoptius.
I'm Amy Hirschfeld-Koppel. I'm in the Deputy Director of Programs and Strategic Initiatives role at Western State Center.
And how long have you been at that post?
So I've been on staff for about a year and a half, but I've actually been part of the Western State Center family for close to 20 years. I was on the board for 11 years before I joined staff. There's kind of an interesting, you know, pattern and path at Western State Center because people identify with the work so much that it's not uncommon over our 30-year history to see, you know, board members eventually join staff or staff shift to the board as they move on to other opportunities. And I grew up in Idaho and was the beneficiary of Western State Center's tools and analysis and resources. I started doing human rights and human dignity organizing in my 20s and connected to Western State Center because I was pretty dazzled by the really strong leadership development and resources that the center provides to organizers out in the region.
And what does your role actually entail? Like, what do you do on a day-to-day?
So as the Deputy Director of Programs, I work directly with Eric Ward, our Executive Director, on implementing his programmatic and organizational vision. I support a program team of five staff that includes trainers and organizers out around the region. So I work to make sure that our annual program plan is scalable, that we're able to seize on opportunities, and that that really all of our work is lifting up our core pillars of defending democracy, building movement, developing leaders, and shifting culture. It's a little bit of a catch-all position too. That's the part of the title that is strategic initiatives. That I'm also, here to land the plane on any number of internal and external projects.
And has that position always been that way, or has just like the shifting tides, the political climate, and just the population, just all the changes, has that position historically been that way, or has it changed throughout the years?
The position itself was new when I started, but you know, again, Western State Center has been around for more than three decades, right? So lots of really amazing staff leaders have come through the organization, and of course, lots of variations of the organizational chart to meet the movement and political needs of the moment. And we've always had program directors as well as trainers and organizers who can manage a portfolio of field relationships in the Pacific Northwest and Mountain States. But my position was new when I started, and it did reflect some of the shift that we've responded to over the last 3 years, certainly as we've seen the rise of, white nationalist and anti-authoritarian movements, and wanted to retool to be able to respond effectively to those threats. So it was a vision that that Eric Ward, our executive director, who started in 2017, created.
And 30 years ago, what was the purpose for the Western State Center? What need did it fill in the community?
Sure. So we were founded in 1987, really as a sort of a regional technical assistance center and movement building shop for grassroots social justice leaders and organizations in the Pacific Northwest and Mountain West states to help those leaders and organizations achieve their missions. The work has stayed pretty true to that original charter, right? You know, while we are based in the Pacific Northwest and Mountain West states, we feel like there are lessons here for the rest of the country. You know, this is one of the only regions in the country to have defeated white nationalism. We're still working to strengthen inclusive democracy and working toward a day where all people can live, love, worship, and work free from bigotry and fear. And we've had some core strategies over those 30 years, right? While the progressive coalitions in states and the campaigns and the issue priorities have shifted, we've always focused on fostering leaders and organizations, coalitions, and initiatives that can win concrete policy and institutional changes can lift up the leadership and voices of our most vulnerable communities. And we really like to develop and deliver accessible tools, really sort of popular education tools for community organizing and collective action. And we're still doing that today. You can look at some of our oldest tools, like our Dismantling Racism Toolkit for anti-racist organizational development, which has Comic Sans font and was created in the 90s and is still requested. And, you know, just last year we released a Confronting White Nationalism in Schools Toolkit and an Indigenizing Love Toolkit. So we're still putting out, I think, really leading edge and adaptable tools for organizers and activists.
Now, I want to get back to the toolkits, but before that, I wanted to ask you specifically for the last 3 years, how has the goal for the center changed or the priorities changed, if at all?
Yeah, so some of the core strategies have remained, but certainly we've adapted to respond to the needs of our movement in this critical time. So, you know, most notably in October of 2017, not long after the presidential election, mm-hmm. Eric Ward became Western State Center's executive director. He's the first person of color to serve in that role. And only the fourth executive director in our 32-year history. You know, Eric has a long history of countering bigoted social movements and has you know, worked for a few decades in our region and then nationally within philanthropy to equip grassroots communities to be able to respond to anti-democratic movements and to hate and political violence. So has a lot of expertise in how white nationalism seeks to undermine democratic governance. And so when he came on, it was really a time where Eric and the board felt like the center was the right vehicle to, you know, retool strategically to engage on a couple fronts, right? First, to challenge the terrain upon which white nationalists and other anti-democratic forces are building their own movements while also strengthening our own organizations and coalitions to withstand those attacks. And to still make some gains around systems and policy change.
It sounds like a good amount of research that goes into implementing the plan or the you know the actions for the center.
Yeah, sure. We try and be very disciplined and strategic, and we actually did commission a research study in 2017 or early 2018 as we were working to make this shift to take on program work to counter white nationalism more directly. We commissioned a research study of all of the sort of available public polling around both Oregonians and Americans' attitudes and openness toward white nationalism. So it confirmed what we suspected, that this is a really substantial and growing threat. It's really an existential threat and a political crisis, and that close to a third of Americans and Oregonians alike are open to some of the core tenets of white nationalism. So that helped to underscore the creation of one of our new programs called Momentum, which is a national project to equip local government, community leaders, you know, influencers and activists to respond more effectively to the rise in white nationalism and authoritarian movements.
Interesting. And I think it's important to highlight that these kind of researches in the center, like the Western State Centers, if you don't do these research studies, no one else is going to do these research studies. So that's why it's really important to be able to have the, you know, research behind it and the, like you said, the strategic planning in order to implement policy and educate, you know, whether it's schools, individuals, organizations. So that is definitely something that's, it's really fascinating. So what does a research study like that look like? Is it just is it like an online study or a form, or is it, what does that look like?
Sure. We worked with an Oregon-based firm called DHM Research. So they did a scan of polling, of literature, of newspaper articles. There were a lot more polls and studies that came out after the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville. So they actually did a scan mm-hmm. nationally of those kinds of studies that had been generated by universities, by newspapers, and then worked to compile that information.
Confronting White Nationalism in School and Indigenizing Love, those two toolkits, did they have that kind of research go into them?
Well, certainly the research scan around how Americans and Oregonians felt about some of the core tenets of white nationalist ideology, that helped to inform our strategies in the Momentum program. One of the projects of Momentum is our Confronting White Nationalism in Schools toolkit. That was created for a few reasons. You know, we did see that middle and high schools around the country were sort of struggling to respond to, you know, white nationalist rhetoric showing up in schools, right? Whether it was a student citing a white nationalist source for a paper, or, you know, some of the high profile news stories of students giving a Nazi salute in a prom photo, or anti-Semitic graffiti in schools, right? We felt like at least we weren't seeing a tool that existed, a really adaptable and practical tool for schools to sort of think through common scenarios, come up with responses, and that could be tailored into parents and folks in the school community, because we really felt like everyone in the school community sort of has a can take action to create a moral barrier in situations like these. We also saw a need because we know that white nationalist groups are seeking to recruit young folks, right? When young people are really, you know, working to understand their place in the world and their views. We know that Andrew Anglin, who's the editor of the Daily Stormer, a neo-Nazi website, has said that, you know, he likes to reach folks as young as 11. We thought that there were a lot of resources, particularly around equity, diversity, and inclusion at the higher ed level, but we weren't seeing the same kind of really hands-on toolkit for the middle and high school level. So that's what drove that creation, and it was co-authored by two educators with a lot of classroom and school community experience, as well as Lindsay Schubner, our national program director for Momentum.
What year was the toolkit created?
Just last year. We released it in February 2019 and weren't sure what the response would be. In fact, we shared with the funder who supported the publication that we hope to distribute it a few hundred times. We've been blown away by the national and even international interest. It's been requested now more than 8,200 times. Hmm. We released a second edition in August, so we've really been overwhelmed and impressed by the response. It certainly seems to affirm that there was a great need for this toolkit.
That's great. And can you talk a little bit about the Indigenizing Love Toolkit?
Yeah, you bet. So the Indigenizing Love Toolkit we just released in August of 2019. It's a new resource for Native youth to build inclusion in their communities, co-authored by Two-Spirit and Queer Native Youth, who really sought to reclaim Indigenous knowledge about genders and love. It was produced in partnership with the Affiliated Tribes of Northwest Indians and the Center for Native American Youth. And it's actually a sort of a follow-up or a natural evolution of a previous toolkit that we released in three editions. That was the Tribal Equity Toolkit, which provided tribal resolutions and codes to support Two-Spirit and LGBTQ justice in Indian country. So this latest toolkit, Indigenizing Love, is really more of a youth-led and popular education tool for Two-Spirit youth to initiate conversations and build understanding in their communities from an Indigenous perspective about gender roles and identity.
Why are these toolkits needed now? Like, why didn't they need them 10 years ago, you know, 5 years ago? Why is the need for them just, I guess, being amplified now?
Sure. So, you know, toolkits have always been a strategy of Western State Center. So we've had success putting out popular education toolkits, and they've always, you know, even though they've been issue specific and sort of responding to a moment in time, they seem to have, you know, throughout our 30-year history met a need. And sometimes they come out of longer leadership development work. So, for example, our reproductive justice toolkit, We Are Brave, that was released initially in 2015. You know, it was the result of years of doing, you know, transformational leadership development project with, you know, women and LGBTQ folks of color in reproductive justice movements. And, you know, same with the Indigenizing Love Toolkit, right? It was, you know, really started when there were conversations around the Tribal Equity Toolkit that was more focused on passing LGBTQ equality ordinances within tribal government, conversations that started then that Two-Spirit didn't feel like there was an equivalent toolkit to be able to move conversations in their community. And then again, the Confronting White Nationalism in Schools toolkit, we really felt like there wasn't a similar resource that existed for folks who are part of, you know, middle and high school communities to be able to, you know, to respond directly to white nationalist activity and organizing in their schools.
And do you find that the Confronting White Nationalism in Schools toolkit is, do teachers reach out and try to get them from you, or do you find students actually try to reach out and get them?
It's been really varied. So both toolkits are available online, available at westernstatecenter.org, and folks can download them for free. It's just a simple online request form, and then you're directed to an automatic download. And, you know, what we've seen from the requests is that it includes teachers, administrators, parents, community members, librarians, folks in higher ed. It really varies significantly. And we also have, we hear a lot from teachers across the country who are looking for training opportunities around it. So in 2020, we'll be working to develop a few Train the Trainer events and reaching out to educator associations and trying to get into the conference spaces where teachers and administrators are looking for these kinds of resources and doing this learning.
No, that's a interesting development. You know, the follow up to it. That's definitely something to look forward to. And I have so you mentioned that Eric Ward is the first person of color to sit at the current post, right?
He's the first executive director of color.
Gotcha. So I was wondering, it seems, you know, as a woman of color myself, as a black woman, it seems that the conversation, right, white nationalism and white supremacies, it's led by other white people. And I'm just wondering, how can another white person explain the negative outcome and even the experience of what racism is without, isn't that a form of white supremacy in itself?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's certainly important to acknowledge that people of color and white folks have really different work to do in this movement, right? And that, of course, white folks is learning about the history of white supremacy and how to interrupt it. You know, that shouldn't happen at the expense of re-traumatizing people of color, right? And should always include an acknowledgement that that white folks don't experience racism directly and benefit from our, you know, historic systems of white supremacy. You know, at the same time, we know that actually a lot of the organizing and research experts in the fight against white nationalism and the anti-hate field, you know, they are immigrants, Jewish, Black, Latinx, Muslim. Many identify as LGBT and queer, like myself. And, you know, none of them are included in the white nationalist vision of an all-white ethno state. You know, we also feel like we're in the midst of a growing social movement, right? You know, white nationalism is on the rise. It's a political crisis that will pit over five decades of racial justice advancement against, a racial nationalist vision of America. So, Western State Center, we feel that isn't a train wreck that we're in a position to survive without making a serious case to white Americans that their future, you know, really depends on a multiracial inclusive democracy that's grounded in our shared values of liberty and opportunity. So, we think that white people better be doing this work and that we need, you know, even more white folks committed to this work, not less, especially in our region.
So is having Eric Ward in his current post kind of an example of showing what that looks like?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Eric is a celebrated, public speaker and scholar on white nationalism and anti-democratic movements. You know, he's also a black man who speaks often about how anti-Semitism animates white nationalism and functions in America. You know, I think it was an important shift for the board to make to hire a leader of color, and you know, it's so so important that leaders of color, but particularly Black folks, are really supported in leadership roles in our region, because they're few and far between.
And are there any upcoming events or maybe like volunteer opportunities for listeners who want to get involved, listeners who are like, hey, I'm a person of color. I'm loving this, what I'm hearing. I'd love to be part of this work. Is there any way they can get in touch or any kind of volunteering?
Yeah, you bet. So our website, westernstatecenter.org, has a list sign on, right? So folks can join our list and we'll get regular updates about our work. I actually check our info ad account every day, so people, just want to reach out directly with an email. I can be in touch about volunteer opportunities and talk with folks specifically about their interest in our work and where they might want to be able to get involved. We do share updates about our trainings and other public events we're supporting on our Facebook page, so folks can like and follow us there too.
And what is that website one more time?
WesternStateCenter.org.
Awesome. And one last question for you, a personal question. When was the first time that you became politically minded or became, as they say, like a political person?
Sure. So I grew up in Idaho. And I think it would have to be 1994. I was in middle school, and that was the year that there was a anti-LGBTQ statewide ballot measure that was levied by the Idaho Citizens Alliance. I think it was the same time that the Oregon Citizens Alliance, an anti-LGBTQ group, was doing the same thing here in Oregon, and it was a time when really the Pacific Northwest and Intermountain West states were kind of a political testing and proving ground for any number of divisive wedge issues like anti-LGBTQ, anti-immigrant, and anti-abortion ballot measures. So, I was a young person and didn't have a deep political analysis, but it definitely sort of appealed to my sense of justice, right? The ballot measure itself offended my sense of fairness because it was such an ugly ballot measure, really, really attacking LGBTQ families in Idaho. And I started volunteering on the phones and canvassing, and then, connected to a network of mentors, adults who were doing organizing work and activism professionally. And that was kind of the beginning, and I never looked back.
Did you ever think that you'd be doing it at a national level, international level even?
I probably hoped so. Probably asked my 14-year-old self, I would have been aspirational enough to hope so. But I also would have thought that I would have stayed close to home, and that, this work was really critical in my community and region.
In coming up to 2020, I know that there is the census coming up, and of course the elections. Is there going to be any kind of, special projects or any kind of events that the Western State Center is going to be a part of or try to promote or something?
Sure. I mean, we have a bold program plan for 2020. I mentioned that we'll be scaling our efforts to amplify that Confronting White Nationalism in Schools toolkit to respond to the need with more teacher training. We'll also be launching a regional leadership development cohort for reproductive and gender justice leaders in the region who are looking to build campaigns and develop resources that address the intersection of gender and reproductive justice and white nationalism and misogyny. So that'll be a new undertaking. We continue to put out really strong research tools. We just released the Plot Against Immigrants website. That's plotagainstimmigrants.com, that maps the ties of the modern anti-immigrant movement to white nationalist leaders and ideology. Mm. And rapid response is an important part of our work. So we do work to support communities directly when they're seeing hate organizing and activity, to be able to strategize and support their efforts. So, I'm sure there's a lot that we can't predict now, but leave a lot of room on our work plan to be able to support communities in that way.
Well, Amy, I really thank you for all the work that you do and that the center does. And I'm hoping that you don't have too much work to do in the upcoming years. But we're definitely looking forward to, you know, being part of getting the message out. And can you give those websites out for the listeners?
Sure. WesternStateCenter.org is where folks can sign up to be on our e-blast list and also request our toolkits. And then PlotAgainstImmigrants.com is a new research tool that we released.
Thank you so much, Amy. And any kind of final words?
Really appreciate this. Thanks for all the great community and movement building work that KBOO does.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Have a great new year, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Amy Hertzfeld-Koppel, for agreeing to be interviewed. As y'all heard, there are many different ways that you can help the fight and how you can make your community a more hospitable, more lovely place to be for everyone. For Hindsight 2020 and KBOO Portland, I'm Tammy Hopteus. Thank you very much.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 4 o'clock. More Hindsight 2020 coming up next.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 2020 Portland Mochitsky Festival on Sunday, January 26th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Viking Pavilion in Portland. The Mochitsuki Festival celebrates the New Year by sharing Japanese-American culture with the community. The festival features hands-on activities for all ages, cultural foods, vendors, and a wide variety of demonstrations and performances, including taiko drumming, Japanese dance, storytelling, mochi pounding, martial art demos, and much more. Again, that's the 2020 Portland Mochitsuki Festival on Sunday, January 26th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Viking Pavilion, 930-